Hi, everyone, and welcome to the AGD podcast series. I'm your host, Dr. Wes Blakesley. Every year, 49,000 people in the U.S. are diagnosed with oral cancer. Almost 10,000 will lose their lives to this disease. What's so alarming is that the five-year survival rate is only 53%, largely due to late diagnosis. Added to this is the difficulty of detecting HPV-derived lesions at the base of the tongue and the back of the throat. We've read a lot about oral cancer in our journals, but today we're going to learn about oral cancer from a survivor's viewpoint. Amber Young, a married mother of two young children, is here to tell us about her oral cancer diagnosis and to share her remarkable journey with us, too. Amber, good morning. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
This is great. Amber, before we begin and get into our discussion, tell me where you were in life on February 3rd, 2015.
Oh, goodness. Well, we had just recently bought our first home. I was 35, mother of two. My daughter was 8. My son just turned 1 in December. So I was a busy stay-at-home mom, taking my kids to activities, doing the daily routine of keeping a house afloat.
And then you went to the dentist.
I did. We made new patient exams because we had just recently relocated, and it had been approximately about 2 years since I'd been to the dentist, since I was pregnant and had my son. And we went as a whole family here to a local dentist, and that is the day my life changed forever.
Now, you are in the North Carolina area.
Yes, we live directly outside of Charlotte, and we bought in a suburb in South Carolina, so I technically live just about 3 minutes into South Carolina in a little town of Fort Mill.
Beautiful area. My son goes to school nearby. So you have your dental appointment, and you have a panoramic x-ray, and what happened next?
I did. As part of the intake exam, the panoramics were complimentary, as you well know. And when the dentist was viewing my panoramics, she noticed that there was a dark spot located below my gum line in my jaw area. And then she offered me the oral cancer screening. And after that, she suggested that I needed to be seen by an oral surgeon. She was so diligent and took me back and actually gave me an additional 20 x-rays for free to carry to the oral surgeon because of where the spot was located, and she really did the best she could at her office.
So then your next step was to visit with a local oral surgeon, correct?
Yes. It took about 2 weeks to get into a local oral surgeon, and the time that I got there, we were allowed to get better imaging and noticed that this dark spot was actually the size of a golf ball growing inside of my right mandible, so in my jawbone, and it was slowly separating my jaw and breaking it, but it was also at the same time pushing the nerve out of the way, so I couldn't feel anything. There was no visual symptoms. There was nothing protruding from my face. There was no pain. I actually had no way to know that there was anything going on inside of my mouth.
So you had no symptoms at all?
No, nothing.
A bolt out of the blue, as they say.
Out of the blue, and the size of a golf ball.
Size of a golf ball.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable. All right, so then you get this news, and then tell us what happened next.
Well, the oral surgeon at that time obviously said that we needed to biopsy the mass, and at that time he removed a wisdom tooth that was still there that he could reach the top of the surface and take a biopsy and send that off. So we did that and sent it to MUSC to be biopsied, got the pathology report back 2 weeks later, and we got an all clear. He said everything's fine, but due to the size of the mass inside my jawbone, I needed to be referred to MUSC to have this removed. He couldn't do that in his office. And that was April 9th. At this point, I took my exam at MUSC with the department chairs there. And immediately when I walked in, the first thing he said to me was, "I know you're worried about your pathology." I said, "No, I'm not worried about that at all, because the oral surgeon said it was fine." And he said very clearly on the bottom of the pathology report that the tumor didn't react well with the K19 dye, which is something they'd never seen before, and we needed to re-biopsy it. But this time we needed to take the whole mass and biopsy the whole entire surface. So I went through and had that removed out of my jawbone there locally. Went through another 2 weeks waiting for the response to come in. Went down there on April 22nd to get our diagnosis.
And what did you learn? This is, again, MUSC is the Medical University of South Carolina.
Yes, sir. It's in Charleston, South Carolina, which is about 4 hours from my home. So that's where we travel now for any treatments or services.
All righty. Good call on that. All right. So now you've had the entire tumor excised, and now you're going to get an official diagnosis, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. When we originally had it removed, the doctors told my husband that it was clear. It looked perfectly fine. There was no nodules, and they really didn't think there was anything to worry about. And when we went down, since it's 4 hours away, we took our kids with us, you know, to take a day trip. And I was in the room, and my children and my husband were sitting across from me, and six doctors walked in, and then the interns lined the hallway. And I knew at that exact moment that this was not going to go the way we thought it would.
Surprise, surprise. So tell us about the diagnosis.
Oh, when the department chair started talking to me, he was very kind, but I remember it being so very surreal, the words that were coming out of his mouth. I was told that this was a cancer they've never seen before, that chemo and radiation weren't effective on it. There was no cure for this type of cancer. They didn't know how to treat it. They were going to have to go to tumor board, and they were going to have to basically take a meeting of the minds and call in oncologists, radiologists, surgeons to see what is the best way to proceed. I'm just sitting there in a daze, just not really processing that he's telling me this, but there are no other known cases in the world, no one else alive with this type of cancer for them to even really refer to as a treatment plan. The official diagnosis is clear cell oncogenital carcinoma. So I'm looking at my kids and not really able to process this. I told my husband to take me to the beach, and the first thing I did is when I walked out was hit Google. I had to Google this as quick as possible. But there was nothing. There was really no information to be had, because there were so very few cases of this, and the ones that they did have were in the early 80s in third world countries. I couldn't even research a help group, look up anything.
So you have a cancer. There's only a few cases in the world. There's no really prescribed or known treatment, and you get this news in front of your whole family.
Yeah. Yep, I sure did. And so we left there with no plan, you know. I immediately started to do the only things that I knew how to do, which was research. We went out and bought all the case studies that we could find and went through reading all the treatment plans, which was not really any good news, because this is a very aggressive cancer. It's 95% aggressive. Normally within 5 years, it metastasizes into lung cancer and or reoccurs several times and eventually kills the patient. I'm the youngest woman to ever have this. I'm the youngest person to ever have this. So I spent a month. I spent a month researching and trying to find any help possible. I even called the Center for Rare Disease Control, and they told me I was too rare.
Wow.
That it needed to affect a certain number of people to qualify for indie kind of funding. And I thought, wow, well, I'm too rare for them.
So you're a rock star, but you've got to get treated, obviously, and you did a lot of legwork on your own, which is commendable. So, Amber, what was the treatment plan? I mean, basically, this thing has to distill down to a treatment plan. What are they telling you?
Yeah, they ended up coming back saying that I needed to have surgery to remove my mandible, and that we needed to take the widest margins possible. They wanted to make sure we got the affected area and any surrounding area or tissue that could have possibly come in contact. So I think I got that news in May, and we were scheduled for surgery June 22nd of 2015. So I had about a month to prepare for the removal of my jaw from my ear to my front chin on my right side. they were taking the bone and tissue from my scapula to replace and to connect my carotid and jugular artery. So I was essentially going to have a flap input along with my titanium brace and bone to keep the blood flow.
Tell us about, I'm trying to process this as we speak. Tell us about the recovery. It's almost unimaginable, but the folks listening in need to know what an oral cancer patient has to endure in the recovery.
Yeah, it was, I tried my very best to prepare myself and my family in any way I could. This happened at the very beginning of the summer. You know, my daughter is 8 years old, very active, and it was really going to affect our whole entire family. We had to travel, obviously, back to Charleston for the hospital stay, which was going to be 10 days long. I ended up having to rent a house for my family to stay in while I was in the hospital during the summer in Charleston so that they could be near the hospital if anything had come up. And my mother ended up coming in to help take care of my children. Once I was out of the hospital, I was able to leave without a feeding tube, but I did have the tracheotomy and I was unable to speak, and I couldn't carry my child because they had taken my bone and tissue from my scapula, and I had 51 staples in my left shoulder along the back, along with the swelling and all of the other issues from having the titanium implanted into my face. So we came home after 10 days, and it was extensive constructive surgery and rest and many, many midnight trips back to Charleston if anything went awry, which was the hardest part, because if there was anything where I had leaking or anything that should not be happening, we had to travel emergency style in the middle of the night back to the doctors to see us. And so this went on for the whole summer, and I had to go to physical therapy 5 times a week for my arm and for my face, and be able to regain the ability to speak and so forth. So it really did affect us on a home level, because I had to have someone in to take care of my children, to drive me places, to take me to my physical therapy, to get my medication, to help feed me, to do all of those things.
I want to talk about eating. My wife is an occupational therapist, and she works in a subacute rehab center. She has for 35 years, and this really hit us, you know, reading through this, preparing for this interview. Tell me about that first bite syndrome, trouble eating, and the H-wave device that would relax your muscles. Tell us about that.
Wow. On top of the oral cancer and the surgery, when I started to regain my ability to eat, you know, the biggest problem was that I was suffering from trismus. My mouth, I couldn't open my mouth because there was so much swelling and things that were going on with my face that it was physically impossible to eat. I did a lot of juicing in the beginning, and slowly, you know, I took small, soft foods and was trying to regain that ability because I was so malnourished as well during this process. I was losing my hair, not from chemo radiation, but just from malnourishment, and doing my best with Boost and Ensures and trying to get as much vitamins I could out of my blended shakes. And when I was going through physical therapy at the facility I go to here, they had the H-Wave. And that actually is a device that is typically used to help relax muscles and things. And they use it sometimes for TMJ. And they had just gone through training at the physical therapy office. And I met with the H-Wave specialist, and they asked if I would be willing to try this on my face to see if it could help me, because they understood that it was so very hard that I couldn't open my mouth more. We actually measured it less than an eighth of an inch when I first started. So opening my mouth, you can't fit a spoon in an eighth of an inch. It's so very hard. Even my son's toddler spoons, I couldn't get in there. So you can't eat if you can't get anything in your mouth. I opted to try the H-Wave, and I would sit for a session when I went for physical therapy for 30 minutes with the H-Wave device on my face. And it essentially is like a TENS unit where it sends waves through the muscles and relaxes them. And by the time I would get done with my treatment, I had the opportunity to open my mouth over an inch. I would leave there like a bat out of you know where and drive to the nearest place locally and eat as much food as I could, because soon the muscles would tense back up and I wouldn't be able to do it. But I'm telling you, those are the best meals I had ever tasted in my life. I know that the restaurants around here thought I was insane. But it was a wonderful treatment, and it gave me the opportunity to work those muscles in my face that I couldn't physically actually exercise. You know, I didn't have the ability to stretch it or massage it and things. So the H-Wave really saved my life when it came down to the eating. And slowly, after my swelling dissipated, I would get a horrible pain when I would eat anything. It didn't matter what it was, in my jaw, to where it would make me physically cry or scream in agony. And I went back to my doctors, and they contacted a few other doctors and realized that I may be actually suffering from something called first bite syndrome, which, of course, is another rarity.
Of course.
And I went and I had the test done, which was amazing. It consisted of me getting a Warhead candy, which is extremely sour, and having my saliva glands ultrasounded to ensure that they were producing enough saliva or there wasn't any kind of scar tissue damage from the surgery. And so we did that and realized I had first bite syndrome. And a lot of times when you have a nerve removed out of your face, the parotid glands don't work properly any longer, and it causes severe pain when people eat. So the treatment for that was Botox, which was kind of nice.
A little Botox always good, right?
That's right. I asked her, I said, well, can I get one on the other side just to even it out in case? But that actually worked. It subsided the pain. And on Christmas, this went on from the whole summer up till Christmas when I got the Botox on December 22nd. And I've had no reoccurrences because it actually just relaxed those nerves so it no longer produces the extra saliva and things which were causing the issue.
So you're very fortunate. Amber, you know, I've known you for a bit now. I know you're a person of faith and great courage. And God sent you some folks to help you. And I want you to talk to me a little bit about oral cancer costs, which is very near to both of us, near and dear, and how they came into your life to help.
Oh, I've got to tell you. You know, I was alone in the world with my cancer diagnosis. And I don't know if you can really appreciate how terribly terrifying that is, to not only be the only person known alive with this type of cancer, to not know that it can be treated, and to know that it has a 95% reoccurrence rate and is very aggressive and typically kills any of its patients within 5 years, is super scary. It's super scary. When I found out the treatment plan in May of 2015, I really didn't know what to do. I was at my wit's end because I realized that I was about to have a $400,000 surgery and then on top of that go through almost $100,000 worth of reconstructive surgery after the fact on my mouth and my teeth. I panicked and I made a GoFundMe page. So I made a GoFundMe page and I shared it via social media, and I really honestly didn't raise hardly any money at all. But within the same day, I had an email from a person in the Charlotte area who saw my post via shares and said, I know someone who can help you. Can I please share your information with her? And I was desperate at this point. I said, yes, please. I'll take anything I can get. And within that evening, within hours, I had an email in my inbox from Linda Miles. She's the co-founder of the Oral Cancer Cause. And she called me that evening and said, I can help you. I know people who've been through similar surgeries. It may not be the same diagnosis, but I know people who can at least walk you through what to expect when you have your mandible removed, what to expect when you have a tracheotomy. Then she asked me what my diagnosis was, and I told her the official diagnosis. She said, you know, we helped another family with that same diagnosis. I said, no, you didn't. And honestly, a year before, they had helped another man with the same type of cancer. So within that same night, not only did she connect me to people that could walk me through a treatment plan, she was able to connect me with the only other known survivor of this type of cancer. And that same night,
how did you feel when you knew you weren't alone? I mean, that you know, when we prepared for this interview and you told me that, I mean, that was like, wow, like the wow moment.
And no, it was amazing. We were on the phone that night, and I call him now my cancer brother. We are instant family. I know his whole entire family, and we talk about our diagnosis, what our plans are, what kind of everything, our kids, everything, literally. But he was alone for a year before me. I only was alone for a month, but he had gone through this at the Cancer Treatment Centers of America in the Philadelphia office alone for a year, having his mandible removed, going through the surgery, having reoccurrences, doing it again. And now we have powers and numbers. Our number may be two, but we have a power in numbers.
an army of two.
That's it.
Unbelievable. Well, anyone who's ever met Linda Miles knows that she stands alone in dentistry for so many reasons. Very special friend to both of us, and God bless her for that. And Robin Mars.
Oh, yeah.
Robin is a co-founder and is also a superlative person and very giving. So God bless both of them for all their help. So right now, I know, you know, in addition to having that titanium implant and bone graft, that you have implants, right, and teeth to restore your bite on that side. So this is kind of ongoing for you, right?
Yeah, it's an ongoing plan. After I got through the surgery, I met with my dental reconstructive team and went through the plan, and it was pretty in-depth. I had to have three implants placed on my left side, and then we are going through and obviously realigning my bite along the way, because as my face heals more over the course of the year and a half, the tissue keeps pulling tighter, which then changes my bite, as you well know. So I keep getting appliances and devices made to realign that. And then she works diligently every couple of weeks. I go see her, actually, most likely 2 to 3 times a month. We do a crown on one tooth, and then we go back and work on the others, and eventually we will rework the whole entire mouth.
That's a lot of work.
But she is fantastic, and, you know, she went to bat for me, and she was able to get it all covered under medical expenses. So I've had some very fortunate, smart, willing, capable doctors on my side, which I could not be more thankful for.
Now, is this your doctor down in Charleston?
Yes. All of my doctors are now in Charleston that I'm treated there. My oncologist, my dental reconstructive surgeon, everyone.
Do you want to give a quick shout-out to your dentist down there, the lady you're just talking about?
Oh, yeah. Dr. Bessie Davis is amazing. She goes above and beyond for her patients.
All right. Yeah, we need to do that. We need to uplift the people that are important in our lives. All right. So, you know, anyone who has cancer, right, is changed. We've talked about that. All right. I'm a cancer survivor. You're a cancer survivor. So we're changed through the experience. How did it change you? What do you want to do now? You know, how do you want your life to change to help others? Let's talk about that for a second.
Well, the oral cancer cause really came to my aid. Not only did they connect me with people, but out of the blue, they sent me a check to put my child in child care while I was going through recovery, which I had no idea how important that was going to be through my process, because I couldn't care for him. We lose so much going through these cancer diagnoses that people don't realize. They affect us in so many levels. Yes, I had oral cancer. It affected my whole body, not just my mouth. they've given me the opportunity to help others along the way, to talk to patients that are going through their diagnosis and really help them process it and move on and find their new normal in life, because that's the hardest part, is that it changes our lives so much that we can't go back to work sometimes. Some of us are no longer allowed to speak. Some of us don't have the ability to do anything, even walk anymore, because we gave up our bones from our legs.
That's right. Yeah, they can take a bone from the leg as well. I think your friend, your other Army of Two partner, right? He had a bone taken out of his leg, correct?
Yes, he did. He actually had it taken out of both of them, and he's having to have his scapula used this next time, because, you know, you have to have the arteries to connect the tissues when we're doing this sort of surgeries. And once you have to, you can only give up so many before we run out and have to start taking donors.
Wow. Well, we don't realize that, because we read case studies in our journals and our textbooks, but we never connect that information to real life people who are going through that. Not only them, but their families. It's always impossible to know how many people, you know, listen to the podcast, but there are thousands that I know that listen in every month, and I'm very thankful for that, because it allows us to get messages out to our colleagues. For the dentists and maybe even staff members, I know some people use the podcast for team meetings. What if you could speak to them directly, if you were in front of a big screen right now and there's maybe 10,000 people that are facing you, what do you want them to take away from this interview?
I would love for them to take away the fact that we need to be doing the screenings. I wasn't your typical normal oral cancer, you know, patient, not something you would look for. I wasn't a smoker. I wasn't a heavy drinker. I had no signs and no symptoms. And without this oral cancer screening and the panoramic and the thorough work of my dentist, I would not be here. My cancer would have literally have killed me within 6 months. And that's hard to think about. 35-year-old with no signs and symptoms would have literally died of an oral cancer she didn't even know she had if my dentist hadn't have done this.
That's unbelievable.
That needs to stop. We have the ability. You know, my regular general practitioner, he's not looking in my mouth. He's not checking for these things. That's my dentist. And without her, I wouldn't have been here.
It's interesting. So that we really have to dovetail with our medical colleagues and pick up the slack, so to speak.
Yeah, because think about it. They really are not checking for any of these kind of oral cancer symptoms. They're not looking in my mouth. The only person that I know that ever really paid attention to what was going on orally for me was my dentist. And with the rise of numbers, especially attributed to HPV, there are only going to be more and more cases in the younger population. And it's a serious matter that we need to take hold of and really embrace.
You made an important point that oral cancer is now, I call it the silent epidemic. That's what I call it in our practice. And it is, the demographic is 20 to 40-year-olds. And these cancers start early on, and they fester, and then they come to fruition. So everyone needs to be screened, and I appreciate your message on that. Amber, we're out of time. I could go another half an hour, but I just want to thank you for being upfront and being vocal about what you went through, to share this with other people. You're a very brave woman, and on behalf of the Academy of General Dentistry, I want to thank you for sharing your story and telling us about your journey, which is ongoing. And I look forward to meeting you. I know we've talked a lot on the phone, but I'm honored to have you to be counted among my friends, and I look forward to meeting you.
Oh, thank you so much for your time, Wes, and allowing me the opportunity to share my story.
Well, it was our pleasure. Thanks again.